Rennie Borg from Running Coach Ireland. Rennie, as always, buddy, great to have you on the show. And I think we've got a really interesting topic today because we've just seen our fantastic Irish mountain runners, Masters mountain runners, pick up another couple of medals this weekend, just gone at the European Masters Mountain Running Championships. And leading the charge was the fantastic Becky Quinn, who got two gold medals in the F50 category, in the classic up and down, and in the long race to 29K. So our focus today is how can we all be like Becky and our fantastic Masters international mountain runners, Rennie, and how do we need to adapt our training as we go into the over 35 and the over 40 category, etc., etc.?
Yeah, and people have probably heard some of it before, but I think it's no harm to repeat sometimes. And we have a few. We came to think of it because of the Masters. There's some great results. I think actually as well, our old friend, I kind of dare to call him Thomas Roach, I think, had three gold medals. And he's a phenomenal athlete. Like, he won down in Clonmel when the Masters was in Ireland. Yeah. And I was very impressed because his time was better than a lot of the guys who were 5 years younger. And there were some very, very good athletes among that. And I saw him compete then, and I think finished sixth in the world, the overall world, like not the Masters. Mm-hmm. So it's great as well to see, you know, that not only can you compete and get medals at Masters level, but some of these people over 40 still retain the ability to compete nearly right at the top.
Yeah.
You know, so that it's worth looking into, and it's worth looking into maybe how do you get there, you know, without being basically like in Denmark, we used to call it a ring wreck, you know, a boxer who had just been in the ring for too long, been knocked about and wasn't up to much, because that can happen as well. You know, that's kind of the dark path. If you are 25 or 30 and listening to this, you know, I think you don't have to tune off. You can maybe just listen in and see if you think I'd love another 20 great years. You know, maybe we can offer a bit of information on that.
Yeah, and maybe just before we kick off as well, just to finish off on the results, a shout out to the fantastic over 70 runner Matt Alexander, who got a gold medal in Sicily just last weekend gone as well. So again, some fantastic medals picked up from the Irish squad. But our first question maybe today, Rennie, is what changes do we see happening as we move into the Masters categories?
Unsurprisingly, we lose muscle mass, right? And there is a lot of debate about whether it's mainly because of age or whether it's mainly because of, which is what's called senescence, or whether it's mainly because of inactivity. You know, because a lot of people move from very active younger lives to they become more and more busy and maybe more and more sedentary and things like that. And it's actually a bit of both. But roughly, you lose 3 to 8% of muscle mass per decade, and it really increases after 60.
Mm.
Now, if you're very, very active, you know, as we all know, as we say, a man we mention often is Bernard Fortune, right? Because he's a very muscular man, so he stands out, and he's a landscape gardener and a great hill runner. So obviously, if you work in a profession like that, where you're really using your body every day, you know, 8-10 hours hard work, you don't suffer that to anywhere near the same degree. But quite a large proportion of our listeners probably have office jobs, you know, so you have that combination of two things. And part of that also comes from your hormones, you know, testosterone levels and things like that tend to start dropping. And it comes from both directions. So if you lose muscle, you lose testosterone production. If you lose testosterone production, you lose muscle mass. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a vicious cycle, right? It goes from both sides. So there's a lot of interest, of course, in saying you have to stay, you have to try and keep your onto what you have and maybe refocus the training a bit, but we'll get into that.
If we're losing muscle mass, if testosterone levels are being affected, I suppose maybe the next thing that might begin to be affected with all of that going on, Rennie, is a reduced VO2 max. Would that be right?
Yeah, so when you can't recruit as many muscles, you can't basically, there's no need for starters for the same amount of oxygen. So it means if you actually were tested, your real VO2, as in terms of how much oxygen can you push into your lungs and push out into your cells, may actually not decrease as much as people think. But your ability to generate enough power via your muscles to actually need it goes down. So that means when you're tested, you can't see it. And that's something actually Peter Snell, the great Lydiard athlete, he noticed, because he retained a surprising amount of his VO2 max even into, you know, his retirement by staying reasonably active, right? So the average sedentary 60-year-old male has a VO2 max of 25 to 35. He still had 56 to 58, right? Which is pretty good, people would know. It's still above the 19th percentile, but he probably came from 75, maybe more. So it's something that it does go down from a mixture of factors, but again, the right type of exercise it can retain it to a large degree. Not 100%, but you can maintain a lot of it.
One big change, Rennie, of course, is slower recovery. And this is a really hard one, isn't it? Because I think, as we get into the over 35, over 40 range, life is very, very busy. Maybe we're kind of getting close to the peak of our professional life, family life. By the time we're in our 30s and 40s, we typically have maybe two, three, four kids. Work is very busy. Family life is very busy. We're not getting enough recovery anyway. But on top of that, our biological clock is against us as well. And from a training point of view, recovery is slower. And then you throw in all the life stressors as well, and recovery can be a real tricky one to get right.
Yeah, and they're all related. That's the funny thing with these things. When you have a higher VO2, you actually recover faster. So that's one of the reasons. And another is that generally, of course, cellular turnover slows down. And that can also have to do with, getting less active, because the less active you get, the less things move around, the less active tissues there are in your body. And all of these things are actually, they even link with death zone, would you believe? So they have made a link showing that the lower your VO2 is, the higher risk you are of what's called functional decline and early death. It's basically when you go under 18 for men and 15 for women. It's quite low VO2, we would all agree. But for most people, that only happens when they're like way into their 90s, that you would go that low. It's good to look at it holistically and say, I need to keep the body functioning with a good level of active tissue and muscles, not too much bad fat. I need to make sure that I do enough clever, that I can keep doing enough clever training that my VO2 doesn't decrease as much as normal, which is 1% per year after 30. And then your recovery will also be slightly faster than your age peers. But that's one thing. The other thing is, it even with all that, you have to make some changes, and that's one thing that got us thinking about this podcast, was that, even the immortal and nearly, superhuman, like Killian Jeannette, put out a video. I think it was on Run 247. He has a new documentary coming out called A Different Athlete, or something along those lines. He's going back to Western States 15 years on, so it's a really good comparison. And he talks about in that how, in many ways, he's actually better than he ever was. But he does have some issues. He has a knee injury at the moment, which is not something he has very often. He talks about how he's handling that. And he talks about how his training is modulated differently and emphasized differently now than it was 20 years ago. So actually, what he talks about is what I think we would like to talk about. So what are the things you could do, and what are the things you need to move around to make sure that you optimize the training for someone who has trained for many, many years, and where the body has some wear and tear, but it still has a lot of benefits. And I hope we have time to cover that as well, Owen, because there's actually a few things that, when you're a master's athlete, you have certain advantages over a younger athlete. Also, to the another category of athlete, which is the late starter, right? Which we mentioned sometimes. Late starters have some of the downsides of being older, but they're lacking some of the, they don't have the wear and tear, that's good, but they are lacking some of the benefits of a long history of training and experience, So if we have those three kind of types, and I think we can touch about a bit, just some quick training tips that people can go away with and maybe implement already, or start preparing to implement if you're only 30.
Well, let's maybe have a look at how we need to adapt our training as we go into those master's categories. And I might kick one off myself with an example from my own training, Rennie, over the last couple of weeks. I had a very busy weekend about 2 months ago on the microphone, working on a race, a fantastic trail race in La Palma. It went really well, really happy with the race, with the work, etc. And but typically, when I'm working at those trail races, you might have a 5 or 6 o'clock start for the ultra races. You're on the microphone then all day, and you're there welcoming home the last runners, which typically might be 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, and beyond into the late night. So, you're on your day, the whole feat. So naturally, you're fairly tired and exhausted after it. But I got back home on a Sunday evening, and the weekend, really good fun, really enjoyable race. And I said, you know what? Even though I'm exhausted, I wouldn't mind having a good session tomorrow. I'm in great form. Let's go and do 10 by 400. I did the 10 by 400, got through the session fine, good fast 400s. But then 3, 4 days later, I noticed an abductor tear, Rennie, an abductor tear. And no doubt, not only was it doing the 10 by 400s on the Monday, but it was just an accumulation, I think, over months of, my little 2-year-old coming into the bed in the middle of the night, disrupting sleep. My little 4-year-old doing the same at a different time in the night. So just 5, 6 months of bad sleep, a really busy weekend, trying to train like I was still in my 20s and without the responsibilities, the daddy duties that come on weeknights, etc., and at the weekends. And therefore injured for the last 7 or 8 weeks, Rennie. Really frustrating. And the first thing I should have done on that Monday morning was probably just take the day off and allow the body to recover. And I suspect that might be one of the first things you're going to say is that we need to prioritize recovery.
Yes, it is, and but I think the no one listens to that, right? Not even ourselves. So I'm gonna try and go a bit deeper to give people maybe an incentive, a positive incentive to make those choices. Because yeah, we need to treat ourselves with more respect and accept that you're never the same person really more than a few weeks in a row, because yes, constantly turnover going on, and the person you are now is not the person you were 10 years ago. And whenever one thing I realized, and I won't go too deep in that anecdote, is I just fast long runs don't agree with me as well as they did 10 years ago. But for some reason, I used to eat that up, absolutely eat it up. And now it has, if it's long, it has to be slow generally, and then the fast can be fast. So these are just things you notice, and for some people, it can be a little bit different than that. But I think, if we really want to change behavior, we need to understand why we can. And the good news is, when you have trained for a long time, so let's say you're listening to this, you've been training 10, 15 years or more, there are four main things that make you a good athlete when you're older, and they don't decline as quickly as you think. So that means there's actually no reason to be in a wild panic to pack in three sessions and a long run every week. So the first is capillarization, which people might know. Okay, so that's increased blood vessels in your muscles. 4 to 8 weeks, you retain them with little or no loss, right? Even so they've actually studied that. 8 to 10 weeks of nearly full detraining, and there was nearly no change in capillary density. So you need to be like completely sedentary for months to see that. And the longer you've trained, the more years you've had a consistent base, the longer they stay if you just have any kind of low level aerobic. So that's already a huge win that people need to put into their master's
That
plans.
makes me feel, Rennie, a whole lot better after my 8 weeks being injured.
Yeah, well, there you go, right? So
I'm still the same athlete. Phew.
that probably wouldn't have changed, right? And then there's mitochondrial enzymes. So 2 to 3 weeks before there's a noticeable drop in performance. So it starts after 10 to 14 days where you're totally inactive. Okay, and most of us are not totally inactive, so it actually takes longer. After 3 to 4 weeks, then again, totally inactive, there could be a significant drop, but even a significant drop means 15 to 25%. And the reason is they're actually, when mitochondria are active, they're expensive. So if there's absolutely nothing going on, the body starts to trim them back. But you get them back with a re-entry plan in 2 to 4 weeks, and then they're like they were before. So now we already have two things that we know are super important, and they actually don't drop that quickly, and they come back. So there's only two things left: muscle memory. And that's probably where masters athletes are the strongest. So that kind of coordination that you have that creates your economy and your efficiency, that is rebuilt in masters athletes twice as fast as in novices, even if you've been inactive for years. Right, so it's like your soil is super fertile. Like if you've 10 years of running or swimming or cycling or whatever activity, even if you go like 5 years, you're just a full-time dad or whatever you do, when you come back, it's twice as fast as someone who never ran or swam or cycled. So that's again, and then cardiac efficiency, of course, very important. The last one, that's where you see your resting heart rate. If your heart, resting heart rate is really low, it means you have a good stroke volume. It takes 2 to 4 weeks before you start to see a noticeable loss in that. Generally, in 3 to 4 weeks, that VO2 max that people like to look at goes down 5 to 10%. But again, that's full detraining. And just 20 to 30 minute aerobic sessions keeps that. 2 to 3 a week, low intensity can largely preserve that, which is actually something I've noticed. What you lose and what people feel they lose is a bit of that long rate, the comfort in going long and the ability to do the tough sessions. But if you look at the foundation, actually erodes slowly and comes back quick. So as long as you kind of keep that in mind, there's no need to do these kind of panic moves that cause a lot of the master's injuries.
A big one that you mentioned there, Rennie, was, and I think we've touched upon this a couple of times over the years, is the 3 sessions per week that we often see in a typical maybe club structure, especially when we're starting off in our 20s, maybe early 30s, that we're training a tempo run on a Saturday, then a club session on a Tuesday, another club session on the Thursday. Where as masters athletes, we don't really need that at all. Even if we're just getting one quality session in per week and backed up by, say, 4 to 5 good aerobic engine base building long runs, that will give us one hell of a chance of performing really, really well. And more often than not, will keep us healthy, will keep us in the game. And that's all we want, isn't it? When we're a masters athlete, we want to avoid those 7 or 8 weeks out injured where that training, that detraining can happen. And, I'm a big believer in that even if we're just training, say 90 to 95% of our full capacity, we'll still do very, very well in race day. So I think a key message for me for the masters athletes out there is definitely to avoid 3 hard sessions a week. Maybe at a push we might do 2 if we're feeling really good, if we're feeling really strong, our lifestyle outside of running allows for quick recovery, etc., to be able to do 2 hard sessions a week. But certainly for me, 1 key hard session is all we need, especially as we're moving through the master's categories from over 35 to over 40 to over 45 to over 50, etc.
Yeah, I think the good thing is most people, as we mature, we do focus more on the personal progress rather than always comparing with everybody else. And I think we have learned to celebrate the milestones we get more, because I remember anyway, often, I would get some big milestone, I'd be happy for 2 seconds, and then I'd think, oh, I need to improve that. And now, I often look back and I'm like, I should have enjoyed that more, because some of those more, they don't come back, and you realize that. And then when you have your kind of later in life race experiences, I certainly find I savor them a bit more, because now I know that it can be fleeting, and you never know where the next big race comes or the next good one comes from. So you have that experience. You often have a more internal motivation as well. You're more kind of focused on improving yourself rather than proving yourself to the whole world. You have a good training memory. Your pacing skills are obviously, as I say, I know 1 or 2 masters athletes who seem to never learn, and I won't mention them, but it's not for everybody. But most masters athletes seems to be a bit more savvy, right? And that can be a huge difference, as you and I know. You can go into a massive race very, very fit, but if you're insecure or if you're overhyped or over anxious, you make pacing mistakes that actually cost you the race to a degree that you can't see the fitness you had. Like, no one who looked at your result would say, yeah, wow, that was a great performance, because the pacing ruined it.
Oh, absolutely, Rennie. And as well as that, we might be the best athletes on paper, or we might be thinking of what athletes are going to be stronger than me in the particular race. But as masters athletes, if we're not training smart, and if we get sick because we're overtraining, or if we get injured because we're overtraining, you won't be there on race day. And if you're not there on race day, you're not part of the podium, you're not part of the results. So it's all about staying healthy. And as a masters athlete, you have to be so smart and not to worry about who your rivals might be, or or your 10 rivals that might be better than you, because half of them might not make the start line. So you have just really got to focus on staying healthy yourself. And if you do, you've got a hell of a chance of, getting right up the results table. There's probably two elements, Rennie, of Masters training that can really help us with that smart training. One of them is strength training, which I suspect is very important as you get into that over 35 age group. And then, of course, incorporating cross training into your training as well to maybe get that extra volume that we might not be able to do anymore with our weekly running volume.
Yeah, it seems like when you become unable to hold the same volume you did before, and that's the case for most masters athletes, unless, as we say, they start late, and then they're kind of following more of a youthful trajectory, but being older. What we see a lot do, and this is actually what Cillian Jeannette says he is doing with his injury on in that documentary coming out, is that he does all his specific work running because that has the greatest transfer. And then all the kind of filler. He might do other things, and that kind of makes sense because if you could actually execute, let's say, a lovely long hill run very well, and then a good session that's very specific to whatever your goals are, and then maybe one more, two more runs, but you actually would like to train 7 days a week still, or 6 days, or whatever it is, if you filled that in with something else, it's that would be enough to because a lot of these filler runs in the early years that build the capitalization and the kind of lifelong fitness or the economy that you already have, they don't give you the same bang for your buck anymore because they're really just there now to keep the aerobic low base humming along in between the quality workouts. And it doesn't really matter when you've run for 10, 15 years whether that extra 30, 40-minute easy run is done, swimming, biking, hiking, whatever. It doesn't have to be running. There's not the same pressure that it has to be.
No, a great point. Strength training, Rennie, I presume you probably recommend it has to be done two times a week if we can. If we can do it three times a week, even better. But we do need to make sure that we top up our running training and our cross training, as you just mentioned, with some strength work as well.
Yeah, I would make well-being and vanity my weapons if you struggle with it. So first of all, pick things like we recommended before where if you can't really do much, do 15, 20 minutes following a video. That's already a great start. But look for well-being and vanity. By that I mean is look for training that makes you feel younger, makes you look younger. You want to look good in the mirror still. You want to feel more mobile when you walk around, like rather than walking around like an old man or an old woman. There's nothing fun about that. It actually makes you feel older. And it's a vicious that you need to still feel a bit of a spring in your step. So try and pick activities where if you just stick with them for a few weeks, you start to feel, oh yeah, I do feel a bit, like my posture's improving, my chest is getting broader, I see a bit more tone here, I walk around feeling a bit more like I did 10 years ago. That's what I would look for because I think that's what's going to create a positive cycle in your mind where you're like, actually, this stuff is good for me. It's doing something that benefits me every single day, not just for the running. And I think when you are 28 and 30, you don't always think about that. You kind of just run yourself into the ground because the thought of what you feel like when you're 40 or 50 walking around is not foremost on your mind, right? I remember thinking things like this. Quite often you will even say, look, if I wreck myself but get my goals, I can live with that. It's worth it. And you see this in elite athletes. I don't know if you've seen those stats on where Tour de France cyclists or Olympians, some of them would nearly kind of take an early death if they could just get their medals. This is the thinking of the young, right? Because it's one thing to think it when the consequences are 10, 20 years down the road. And so I think I would look for that because I think if you start to do things where instantly your whole quality of life improves, not just when you're out for your run, but actually just when you're moving around wherever, you are going to actually get motivated to do more of it. And I find for people who don't enjoy strength training for its own sake, that's the best way to get the habit implemented. Whereas there are people, and probably plenty of people listening as well, who actually enjoy it. And for you, it's much easier, right? If you're listening, like that's if you love, sitting, hitting a few weights, or going the feeling of going to the gym and the burn in your muscles, you're already in luck because you're already kind of that's something you already crave and you're going to seek it out anyway. And of course, finally, we know that things like hill sprints and tempo runs and all this, even hill running itself, has a greater muscular demand than just running around on the flat jogging.
Yeah.
So implemented correctly, as we know, with the right recovery and enough protein in the diet and all these things, enough rest and sleep, will also help. You know, sprints are particularly powerful actually for the older metabolism. The only problem is that a lot of older people mechanically need to be very careful when they sprint because they mightn't actually be ready for it. You
Yeah.
know, so you have to start with easy strides and maybe controlled one leg exercises and all these things. And just to make sure that when you go out on a hill and you hit, you know, if you had a power meter on, you hit 700, 800 watt, that you don't straight away break something because maybe you haven't done much of it for the last 10 years. Whereas if you have been sprinting throughout, you know, your whole career, there's no reason to believe you know, that you can't just keep doing it. You just need to follow all the other advice we gave, you know, that, you know, if you used to do two or three sprint sessions a week, once is probably enough now.
Yeah, we've touched upon, Rennie, over the last 15, 20 minutes, the training strategies and how we need to adapt them when we enter into the master's categories. But what about outside of the actual training itself, whether it's running, cross training, strength training? Give me your top three or four extra things like nutrition or recovery strategies that we should be on top of to incorporate into our weekly schedule, our weekly plan.
Yeah, it's one good one is kind of what I alluded to there is try and still take on a lot of the habits of the young. You know, that you still move a lot, have some protein in the morning. You know, a lot of us just kind of, a lot of people say they just rush through a carb meal, which has certain advantages. But you actually, if you get protein in the morning, cellular repair kind of goes on straight through the morning as well. Hydrate properly. Don't rush from meeting to meeting and forget to drink at all, you know. And because you have a lot of commitments and stress, a lot of people don't sleep properly. You know, when they hit middle age, because maybe they're worried, maybe they have a lot of pressure, maybe the cortisol is so high that even if they get 7 or 8 hours, it's not very good. You know, so you need to try and, you know, when you're young, think about how that was. You know, you are a little bit more carefree. You had less concerns and worries, so you can't necessarily take the concerns and worries away, but you might go out of your way to look for ways to manage it. You know, like mindfulness practices and breathing routines. But actually, a lot of masters athletes already do this. On the studies show that there's some studies show that masters athletes in many times recover better than when they were young, not because their physiology is better, but because now they take recovery seriously. You know, they're not going out to all night parties, they're not skipping meals, and they have a lot of experience in what works and what doesn't. So if you already have that, you know, if you know yourself, you know what doesn't work for you, it's just really a matter of still staying disciplined. And if you have moved into the phase of your life where really running is not the main thing anymore, you know, it's just a hobby you want to keep, then you have to take that commitment seriously as well, in the sense that don't train like when it was everything to you, you know, the only goal, the only hobby, if you're no longer living that lifestyle. Because I see that in a few people, you know, where once they did everything right, because and then they trained like lunatics, and that worked together. So how you approach your life is, you know, and the training needs to be kind of in harmony. You can't live a life of someone who's just enjoying having a few glasses of red wine every night, but still trying to train like a semi-elite. You know, that doesn't work.
Yeah, it's about setting those realistic goals, isn't it? And of course, athletics is fantastic for masters athletes, Rennie, because just like we spoke about at the top end of the conversation, you know, we have specific European Masters Championships, World Masters Championships, National Masters Championships, even as well. So, you know, we don't need to be competing against the young 20-year-olds or the 25-year-olds anymore. You know, we can compete against people who have those responsibilities in life outside of their running, whether it be jobs or with families. So we can all be a little bit stressed out together and a little bit exhausted together and enjoying our race together as well. And just mentioning the international competitions, we spoke about the European Masters in Sicily and the great results. Don't forget, guys, as well, for our listeners, that we've also got the World Championship as well in Madeira in Italy in August, the Mountain Running World Championships as well. So, I mean, that's a fantastic goal for anybody that's listening that's in the over 35 category. And of course, the great thing about these championships, Rennie, is you don't need to qualify. You can just
No, you don't need to qualify, so you won't bust yourself up in a trial. And it's a good excuse to get out, because that's something I really should have mentioned. And I was listening to the radio that even in the mainstream now, there is more talk about how much of the problems we probably have with our hormones and health and all this, that is down to the fact that we have a population that has probably never been indoors more. It's really important to be outside, you know, get some sun and some wind on the skin and in the eyes and all these things. It's hugely important to everything in the body. So that's probably something that gets a lot of people compared to their youth as well, you know. But the good thing about trail runners is you have a lot of excuses to get out and to stay out for many hours, you know, many more than it will very quickly add up. I know there are some people who say, just try for God's sake to get at least an hour outside per day, you know, as a very minimum. And I know it's a bit easier for you down in Gran Canaria, Owen, than for us up here.
Oh no, yeah, definitely it is. And I might just maybe wrap up on my side, Rennie, with my tip of the day for masters athletes is you spoke about the importance of protein and keeping that muscle synthesis going and recovery going and how important it is to make sure that we lift weights, that we recover. My protein tip of the day, Rennie, is with your bowl of porridge. I think a lot of runners might have their big bowl of porridge post their early morning runs, is to throw in a couple of scoops of protein powder into your porridge, mixing in with a bit of honey, and that's your 25, 40 grams of protein with your breakfast, because you know, porridge at the end of the day, you might get what 9, 10 grams of protein out of it. Throw in a couple of scoops of, I typically put in pea and rice protein into your porridge. Doesn't sound very tasty, but when you put in a little bit of honey, it does the job nicely, and then that starts the recovery process straight away early in the morning. Benny, what do you think? Will we sign up for these World Masters Mountain Running Championships in Italy in August? Will we hop on the
Yes,
together?
I'm sure we'll hear much more about it. But I am actually heading off for a staycation, and so I will sign off now, Owen. And we'll see everybody. We will only say you'll listen to us hopefully in 2 weeks' time.
Absolutely, Rennie. Thanks a million, Rennie. I'll talk to you soon, mate. Take care.
All right, talk to you. Bye bye.
Well, there we have it, guys. Thanks as always to Rennie for his contribution. And before we go, we mentioned it in our last episode that we wanted to clear up who has the most amount of wins at the Wicklow Way Relay. Well, statistician Kieran Alward from Rathfarnham WSAF has been on to us, and he has it at 6 wins from his own club, Rathfarnham. TT Racers have 4. 4 wins in a row between 2016 and 2019. And East Cork, as we spoke to there in our last episode with Nick, the team captain on the day, they were celebrating their 3rd win in a row, 3 wins in a row as well. So exciting years ahead, no doubt, as we see those heavyweights fight for that top spot of the record books, and we might even see a new team coming to the fore as well. Until next time, everybody, and don't forget, do please pop over to Patreon if you can for €3 a month to help keep us going. Everybody, get your running gear on. Let's go.